When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
They were the heroes from the future. Teenagers protecting the universe from those that would sow the seeds of chaos. Each had unique powers and abilities. And though they often had their differences, they came together to save the day as the Legion of Superheroes. Now, you can be a part of their adventures and learn the history of the future in the Legion Clubhouse.
Matthew, Jim Shooter, we talked about as one of these creators that stepped in at a very young age and started writing comics for DC. But there is someone who did it decades before Shooter did.
That's very true.
And we're going to take a look at him in this week's installment of the Legion Clubhouse.
Adventure Comics number 350, The Outcast Superheroes. Published November 1966. Written by E. Nelson Bridwell, with art by Kurt Swan. A kryptonite cloud means that Superboy and Supergirl must leave the Legion forever.
Matthew, I've got the cover of this brings me back some weird memories.
Mm-hmm.
The cover of Adventure Comics 350 has like Lightning Lad and Saturn Girl flying off, and it's got other characters kind of embracing, and you could tell there's like love in the air on this cover.
Love is in the air.
And then you get to the very front of the cover in the foreground, and there's Superboy and Supergirl walking away, tears in their eyes, and they have been ejected from the Legion of Superheroes. Yeah. And the weirdness of the cover is, oh, everybody else has hooked up, but Superboy and Supergirl can't hook up, and that's why they're out. Isn't there some weird thing that happened where Supergirl or a Superman was like looking for his perfect partner, and it turned out to be Kara?
Yes and no. What you're thinking of happened in Action Comics number 289.
Okay.
And in Action 289, Superman was in fact searching for his perfect partner.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a scene that you see a lot in people going, hey, comics used to be nuts, where Clark is looking deeply into Kara's eyes and going, if only you could be my one true love. But unfortunately, we cannot, for marriage between cousins was illegal on Krypton.
I think it's illegal in the U.S. too, but there you go.
Well, yeah, but this is the
I mean, I shouldn't say it's not illegal. They highly discourage it because of, problems that can arise with your kids.
Absolutely. But in this story, Kara actually finds Superman a perfect mate on another planet. Her initials are LL. LL, Luma Linai of the planet Steril, who literally looks like a grown-up Kara.
Oh, man, that's too weird.
No, it gets even weirder, because if you go and you really, really look at it, and you're like really, really looking at it on the cover, the only real difference on this Kurt Swan, George Klein cover between Kara and Luma Linai is that Luma Linai is slightly taller. It's not even a question of Luma Linai is a grown woman with a grown woman's body or anything, you know, too over the top like that, because it's a comic from 1961.
Yeah.
But they look almost identical. It's like he went out and found a woman who looks just like his family, only slightly taller, and that somehow took the curse off it.
This issue, or these two issues in this week's episode, The Outcast Superheroes, where Superboy and Supergirl are gone, and we get introduced to Surprise and Miss Tyrius, two armored figures that, if you look at that first splash page, the way they're posed and the way they're running, one of them's missing a set of wings, and the other one is missing a different helmet. And they, when I first look at it, just a real quick passing, I would say, oh, there's Ant-Man and the Wasp. Oh, wait, this is a DC comic. That doesn't happen here.
That's interesting because I guess the silhouette is very similar.
Well, then again, comic book heroes all kind of have the same silhouette, right? And that is one of the things that is throwing off the Legion members, because throughout this issue, they're like, I'm pretty sure that Surprise and Mysterious are really Superboy and Supergirl.
This is actually one of the more clever, if inexplicable, starts of a Legion story, because we see Clark Kent at home in 1956.
Right.
And then we also see that Kara is at home in 1966, and they are called to the future through an emergency signal from Invisible Kid, the leader of the Legion. Mm-hmm. And it's really kind of a strange opening, because we don't usually see a story that starts in the past necessarily, at least since the, you know, the Superboy era ended when they were just guest stars. Mm-hmm. But there's terrible news, Stephen.
Apparently, it's really crazy because somehow all the bad kryptonite, the quote unquote Green K Man, all swarmed through some crazy nebula, through some wormhole. And while it was going through the wormhole, all that Green K went from rocks to pulverized dust, and it encircled the planet Earth, making it that Superboy and Supergirl can't be there for at least 2 years. Mm-hmm. At which point, we jump forward to 1968 with Superboy going, man, what have you guys been doing for the last 2 years? I've only been gone for 5 minutes.
That's not how time travel works.
That's the weird part, right?
That's not how time travel works in a DC comic of the Silver Age, I guess I should say.
And everybody has done everything. I mean, Cosmic Boy has tried to get up there, but the Earth's magnetic pull is too much for his powers. Lightning right. Lad has gone out to try to, burn it off. And so has Sun Boy has gone out to try and burn it off. And then Element Lad is like, oh, I'll just convert it to something else. And it starts to act a little weird. And when he takes it back home, they find out, oh, man, if you would have kept doing this, you would have ignited the atmosphere.
And destroyed everybody. The entire Earth.
That's crazy.
That is crazy.
So there's only one solution. I mean, if you can't have Superboy and Supergirl around, 1968, everybody, you can't have them around, they might as well be kicked out of the Legion.
Well, they have to be for their own safety. Because they are actually immediately negatively affected. And it's only the Legion clubhouse having the shielding that it does that keeps them from, you know, being poisoned to death. Mm-hmm. So the Legion decides that they are going to send them away with honors. They're going to honorably discharge Superboy and Supergirl from the Legion. And to do so, the first thing they have to do is steal their action figures from 1956 and 1966.
I forget who it was. Mattel, Hasbro, I forget which company it was. Mm-hmm. But they released like a 13-character collection, I want to say, of the Legion of Superheroes.
Yeah.
And they packaged it in a box that kind of is round and closes so that when it's closed, it looks like the Legion Clubhouse. It is such a cool collection.
I actually have that.
I have one, too.
I think you got me one.
I did get it for you for your birthday, yes.
Yeah.
And what's cool is they use the Time Cube. Now, this is the first hint of something that we're going to be talking about shortly. But the Time Cube appears. And then all of the action, and they use that to bring the action figures forward. And they're like, hey, remember these action figures? We're going to smash them because there's nothing you can have that reminds you of us in the past. In fact, here's a statue, Superboy. That was made from the fragments of Dr. Regulus's ship. You remember from just a couple of episodes ago. And here's the costume, Supergirl, of when you were that red kryptonite Supergirl. Oh, and here's the flag of Krypton and Superboy that you carried into battle when we went back into ancient times. And they're like, oh, these are such great gifts. Thank you for these parting gifts as we are honorably discharged. And they're like, we're locking them away.
We have to hide them because you might inadvertently give away something in the past. So we must wipe your memories. But we're giving you these gifts that we're going to keep in storage. This is a lot like when my mom used to say, you know what? I got you a birthday present. I planted a tree in Israel.
Yeah.
No, that's not a birthday present for me.
Yeah. Hey, but Superboy at least gets kissed by Duo Damsel twice.
Yeah.
And there is a great makeout scene between Brainiac 5 and Supergirl.
Yes, and we've seen
I was going to say, this is not just a casual little smooch, you know, hey, nice going, nice seeing you, we'll see you soon. This is an actual, like, full-on, lip-on-lip, eyes-closed, you know, passionate
music
embrace.
Swells in the background, yeah. This is that moment where, I mean, we've had hints before that Brainiac has a crush on Supergirl, but we've never seen anything flat-out like, love is
And you
strange.
Can tell that there's, like, super feelings going on here.
She's tearing up, and he's all flat and terrible and sad and just, ugh.
Well, but these two have forever, and in any incarnation where Brainiac and Supergirl appear at the same time, maybe not in the current Supergirl TV series.
No,
but
it's
where,
there.
Wherever these two have appeared together, they are, like, madly in love with one another. Go back and look at the animated cartoons. Go back and read, you know, any of the, even in the reboot Legion. Mm-hmm. But the weird thing is, we know that they've kind of been sweet on each other. But for readers, this is like the first time we've actually seen like deep, deep affections. Like, oh, these two are a serious couple.
Yeah. And it really works, at least for me, in this scene to remind me that A, there's a lot of continuity in the Legion, even this early in the run.
Oh,
and
yeah.
B, these are teenagers, dude.
Yeah. I mean, the first two pages is just full of continuity. I'm curious, though, in any of the Supergirl issues that are out there,
mm-hmm.
is there any kind of romance between Supergirl and Brainiac at that time? Or is this, you know, just only stuff that's happening in the pages of the Legion of Superheroes?
To my knowledge, and I have not, I'm not one of those guys who obsessively collects every appearance of the Legion, even if they're in one panel. Although, as we've seen from this show, I'm close to it because we did review that issue where President Kennedy appeared. But I'm not familiar with anything other than just the subtext that we've seen in these issues of Adventures to
date. That's really crazy. That is really,
it
really
is.
Crazy.
I mean, you go back, though, their very first appearance establishes their crush on each other. And she's like, oh, I have a boyfriend from the future. And I have a boyfriend who's a mermaid and also a boyfriend who's an Amazon for some reason.
Right. But yeah, I've never seen it really develop. I mean, we've never seen any comics or stories that I remember to this point where they're like just seen holding hands or, you know, when they're having their crazy kissing parties. We never see those two smooching with one another.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's kind of a shock, but it's also, as you said, this is the last time that Brainiac is ever going to see Supergirl ever.
For 2 years.
Forever, ever. And so they better make this kiss matter.
One for the ages. It's like that time that Barney and Ted had to slap a high infinity because they would not see each other again.
Mm-hmm.
But
so here's the other thing that's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen Superboy be hypnotized, and I could have sworn that you have said before that when they go back in time, their memories are kind of wiped. They have a post-hypnotic suggestion that is put into place to prevent them from remembering what's going to happen.
In fact, they have stated that the super kids, Superboy and Supergirl, have actually had to give each other the hypnotic suggestion because only a super hypnotic suggestion would be strong enough. Just a few episodes ago, we actually had the reference, and there was an editor's note that said Supergirl gives Superboy a hypnotic suggestion so that he doesn't remember anything that happens in the future of the Legion.
So why can't they just do that? It doesn't make any sense because Brainiac's like, listen, the only way we can ensure that that you guys don't remember anything that's going on is for a teenager to perform a lobotomy on you.
She doesn't perform a lobotomy.
No, but I mean,
she puts a poison
surgery
pill
on
in
you.
Their brains, which is this entirely different than a lobotomy.
So the solution is they're going to put what in their brains?
Kryptonite.
A little bit of kryptonite. And how is she going to do it?
She's going to inject herself into their noses.
She's going to shrink down
and go
right
into
their bloodstreams and swim around with all their corpuscles and their white blood cells and their plasmas and their dog plasmas.
Steven doesn't actually know what's in the blood cell, by the way.
Listen, this book, this issue came out in, I want to say, November of 1966.
That sounds right.
Just a few months before, there was a movie about a bunch of people who, I can't remember if they had to go into the president's body or whose body they had to go into, but it was super important that they get whatever was the problem with this guy out. And the only way they could do it is for everyone to climb aboard this submarine and get shrunk down to a little tiny microscopic size and inject it into the guy's body. And then they had to navigate up the guy's body to the brain or to the heart. I forget which way they were going. But
I think they had to go to the brain.
Yeah, they had to go to the brain. I think it was a blood clot or something that they had to get rid of.
That sounds
right.
The
name of that movie, The Fantastic Voyage.
It's my favorite Coolio song.
In that movie, there was a moment where Raquel Welch is outside of the submarine and the white blood cells start to attack her.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go back and look, I'm pretty sure that in The Fantastic Voyage, their quote unquote space suits are yellow with this weird tanky top that Shrinking Violet has.
Yeah.
We've seen this again and again and again. This is not a horrible gimmick, right? Where there is some popular movie that's going on, and we're going to borrow something similar to that and incorporate it into our book so that when kids read this, they have a greater affection because they're like, oh, cool, this is just like that movie that came out. And we've seen that with the Goldfinger thing.
Yeah.
We see it here with Fantastic Voyage. We see it with the Colossus and the Forbin Project and the Daleks and all that stuff. I don't know if you caught the Fantastic Voyage reference here or not.
I caught it. I wasn't aware that it was that soon. In my head, Fantastic Voyage is a movie from the 50s for some reason.
Yeah, no, this came out in August 1966. And here's the weird thing. Bantam Books was given the rights to do the book adaptation of the movie. And they were able to get, of all people, Isaac Asimov to write the novelization of The Fantastic Voyage.
Wow.
Which is really, really cool, right? I mean, we know who Isaac Asimov is. We talked about it, the Robot's Three Laws, all those kinds of things. But the weird thing about this is, because it's Isaac Asimov, and he is known in the 60s, this book came out 6 months before the movie did. Novelizations, I have read novelizations of movies 2 or 3 months before the book, before the movie has arrived. I have read the novelization of a book that came out on the same day that the movie arrives. But 6 months ahead? Wow, that's crazy. And it's so crazy that when the movie did come out, people thought that the movie was based on the book that Isaac Asimov wrote.
Oh, rather than vice versa.
Yeah. And when I look at this, when I saw these couple of pages in here, I'm like, oh, let's see who influenced who in this case. And in this case, it definitely appears that Nelson Bridwell, who's the writer in this issue, is definitely influenced by The Fantastic Voyage.
I would actually agree with you, because one thing that I noticed in this issue was that the spacesuit that Violet wears is actually not the first spacesuit we see in the issue.
Right.
We see Cosmic Boy, Sun Boy, and Lightning Lad, and Element Lad in space, in spacesuits. We don't generally see the Legion in spacesuits.
And what's in, because I have a lot of questions about this, because they appear not to be out in space. They appear to be in our atmosphere.
Right.
Blasting this stuff. And, you know, unless it's an inhalant issue.
Right.
The green K shouldn't be affecting them.
Well, and again, the reason there's a concept in the Legion of Superheroes history called a transuit. And the transuit is an invisible spacesuit. And the reason why the concept of the transuit exists is that there are multiple instances, even this early, of characters being in space where they shouldn't be able to breathe.
Right.
They should need a spacesuit,
right,
not clearly having one. So the fact that the transuit exists is to try and explain, well, that's how this happens and that's why this happens. That's how they can be in space and not have a visible suit. The transuit is invisible.
Right. And so that, and we don't see the transuit here yet.
No, it doesn't show up, I think, until by name until the 70s.
However, we have seen Brainiac incorporate his force field. That's part of his ring.
That's true. Of his belt, actually.
Yeah, of his belt. Does the transuit come from Brainiac's force field?
The transuit comes from your Legion flight ring.
Ah, okay. But is it based on the same principles of Brainiac's force field?
I don't think so. I want to say that it is actually just an invisible wrapper or a transparent, like transparent aluminum. Mr. Computer.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a transparent suit, hence the name. Transuit.
Exactly. So we get a lot of flashbacks and we get, some crazy references to things that have happened in the last 20 issues. I mean, it's really impressive that that we have so much referencing events that have happened in the past, including, instead of using the time bubble, Supergirl and Superman climbing into the time cube to go back to their respective time periods.
Yep. And that is what's truly remarkable. We see a lot of Legion continuity, and on the whole, it's made up.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, remember this time that this happened and these things happened? But the gifts that they are given are flashbacks to Adventure 313, the Satan Girl story, 333 and 334, 341 with a computo bit, and the helmet that Supergirl wore as Unknown Boy in Adventure 334. These are all actual bits of Legionnaire business, if you will.
It's crazy.
It's, I know, it's almost like a comic nerd wrote this whole story.
We'll get to that in just a minute, but the brainwashing, the lobotomy, whatever they've got going on. Oh, I did want to say one more thing about this kryptonite that's been embedded in their brains.
Mm-hmm.
If I am not mistaken, when Grant Morrison was doing his Action Comics run in the, what was it, like 2000 and I forget when that was, 2015?
His run with the New 52?
Yeah, the New 52.
2011.
One of the things that happened in that run is the Legion of Superheroes mysteriously appear, and if I'm not mistaken, they're inside Superman's brain trying to get some kryptonite or something out of his head. Am I imagining that?
I don't remember. I didn't actually read
it. I tried to look through it today, and you know, there's three volumes in that arc, and I can't remember at what point it happens, because when they appear as the Superboy Hero Squad or something, they're there as to protect, and they're like, we must protect, and then there's this green glowing thing, and then there's another thing that looks like a white blood cell or a goopy bit coming to try and get them, and it's only until you've read the entire run that everything makes complete sense. So I had the weird suspicion that at one point, a lot of things that were going on with Superboy in that Action Comics run, he was hallucinating, and part of it was because they had to get inside his head to get out a piece of green kryptonite. And if that's the case, holy crap, that's a deep cut by Grant Morrison, who's also known for going in and doing the deep cuts. Now, I'm sure one of our listeners will go and track down the Action Comics and fill us in either on the Twitter, at Major Spoilers or at Mighty King Cobra, or and on the comment section over at majorspoilers.com or podcast at majorspoilers.com to drop me an email. But that is a recollection I have of that Action Comics run, because when the Legion of Superheroes showed up, I was like, holy crap, this is cool. So we'll find out more about that. But in the meantime, before we're not even halfway done with this book yet, Matthew.
No, there's so much going on in these pages. I mean, it's just, we haven't had one this packed, I think, since Siegel left.
Yeah.
Just page after page, because after Violet basically lobotomizes the super teens and they go back in time, the Legion all of a sudden has a bunch of terrible things happening, and their new members, Surprise and Mysterious, start hanging around with the team, and bad luck seems to follow them.
I don't know if it's bad luck, because deep in space. This is where the issue just takes a huge turn for me, and I'm sitting here going, what the effing F is going on in this book? It's the Devil's Dozen, and we're introduced to Dr. Evil-O.
Prince Evil-O, thank you very much.
Dr. Evil-O. Prince Evil-O.
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 That's what I'm saying, Evil-O.
No, say it with me. E.
E.
V.
V.
Low.
Low.
Evil-O.
Evil-O.
See? Say Cool Whip.
So he is going to bring his Devil's Dozen. This dude.
I'm sorry. Every time you say Devil's Dozen, I recognize this, but there's five of them, dude.
Right. That's the other thing. He doesn't summon ever. I mean, and this is the weird thing. He's like, I'm going to summon my Devil's Dozen. And then later, as we'll find out in another part of the issue, he tries to add to his Devil's Dozen. He's like, well, my Devil's Dozen isn't complete, so I'm going to put you in this container and have some evil forces go into your body so you can become a member of my cult.
But it's really, dude, at this point, more of a devil's handful.
This story goes from this weird sci-fi future story to here's a guy that literally looks like the devil. Mm-hmm. An old witch flies in. A centaur wearing a Robin Hood costume shows up. A Viking guy shows up. An Adonis character shows up.
Yes.
This is like all crazy fantasy stuff. And they have some infighting and some bickering, and they decide they want to go rob an interplanetary bank together. And I'm just like, what is going on?
And the interplanetary bank doesn't have traditional security. It has a terrible, savage, composite creature. Just freaky, freaky.
It's called the Jigsaw Beast.
And it's terrifying.
Can break itself into component bits, like his head can come off and fly around, and his body can come off and fly around, and it is creepy crazy.
It is horrible.
Yeah.
And Colossal Boy actually outsmarts it by convincing it to fight itself. So you can't figure that this bank is not robbed every 35 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Well, they also have some kind of a weird bellow beast that Surprise. Attempts to succumb or to beat him up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Surprise comes in and beats him up.
Sure.
So, you know, these guys are pretty cool, and some interesting things are happening, but the bad guys are able to get away, and while Lightning Lad and Saturn Girl, I'm sorry, Imra. Stay back, Imra. I'll handle these baddies. Lightning Lad is captured.
Did you catch Chameleon Boy's line winking to the reader and making an overt reference to Marvel Comics?
In case
a certain web-headed character thinks I'm stealing his thunder, I want him to know I was changing to weird shapes long before he walked up the wall, says Chameleon Boy to me, personally, the reader.
Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, he does transform into a giant spider. I mean, somebody who's out there with spider powers certainly would have something to say.
That's an overt reference to Spider-Man, you guys.
I mean, I already mentioned that we have Ant-Man and the Wasp in here. Right?
Did you?
I did.
Did you? Okay.
So, I don't know what's going on with these dumb characters. I mean, these characters are dumb.
They are very old school. It feels like a 50s Superman book, like when he would team up with Hercules and Atlas.
Yeah. So, yeah, I have this question after reading this particular issue. Next issue, a lot of this gets cleared up.
Yeah.
And especially when we get into the middle section of the show, a lot of this will be cleared up. But it feels like at this point we have reached that awkward teenage years of the Legion where they feel super stupid for falling for these dumb stories. Or maybe we as the reader should feel super stupid for falling for these dumb stories. But at the same time, we've got someone like Shooter writing who is like, hey, I'm too cool for, you know, adults. So I'm telling this wackety woo story, man. And it just feels like we're in this weird... I still want to play with my toys, but man, toys are things that we shouldn't be playing with anymore.
There's definitely an identity crisis here. And I believe that much as last episode, we talked about how the story still felt like throwbacks to a pre-Shooter era.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this may be the first influence of a post-Shooter era where somebody told the writer, hey, that Shooter kid did X, Y, and Z. We want to emulate that. We want you to write like him and do, you know, Marvel style stuff in these things. And this is what came out, because they're trying to do humor and weird adventure and self-referential winks to the camera. And it doesn't work the way it does when Shooter does it, because Shooter is authentically a kid. I think this feels like someone trying to mimic Shooter's I'm authentically a kid thing.
Yes, but at the same time, still throwing in these great bits like Matter Eater Lad is still a tubbo.
Fatter Eater Lad is what we call him.
Yes.
This is his single appearance as an actual Legion member in his, let's say, supersize phase.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's this issue and issue 351 that we'll get to here in just a minute. The last thing that I want to mention about this issue, which is so cool, is they're back at the Legion headquarters after letting the Devil's Dozen, not quite a Fatal Five, but those will come soon.
Don't joke about that.
They're back at the Legion headquarters going, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? We've just lost Superman and Supergirl, or Superboy and Supergirl, and we've got Ant-Man and the Wasp here. And then suddenly popping up on their screen is this old man with a mustache Mm-hmm. Going, call in Legion, Mayday, Mayday, these people have come to my planet and they're taking over, come and help me quick. And then suddenly, like, Pharaoh boy, mm-hmm. Pharaoh lad shows up, which is another surprise. Pharaoh lad shows up in this issue.
Yep.
And he's like, why is this old guy telling us what to do? And they're like, he's the quote unquote Santa Claus whose endowment helps support the Legion. We have to do what he says. Now, he gets named in the next issue. But ladies mm-hmm. and gentlemen, this is the first appearance of R.J. Brand.
Yes, this is. Now, again, we've never seen the Legion's origin to date.
Nope.
This is, in fact, the character who every time you see the Legion's origin and three teenagers save an ultra rich man. This is that guy.
Yeah, this is that guy. And it's really cool. R.J. Brand appeared here. There are a couple of things that I will point out that I don't know if people will know this yet, because I think this was some retcon. No, I don't even think this is retcon history. I think this is part of. No, it is part of retcon history.
It is, yeah.
But here's the thing. In these two issues, he is referred to as R.J. Brands, B-R-A-N-D-E-S. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's because the letterer forgot to put in an apostrophe at one point and was just like, all right, well, this guy's name is Brands. Mm-hmm. But his name is R.J. Brand. Mm-hmm. There is a bit inside this issue which we haven't mentioned yet. It's called Bits of Legionnaire Business.
Yes.
And in that section called Meet the Legionnaires, they have a little column called Meet the Legionnaires, The Origin of Chameleon Boy.
Yes.
And this is fascinating because they do go into the planet of Durla, the Durlans. Here's the shapeshifters. Here's Chameleon Boy's powers. I don't think I've seen this pop up yet in any other comic that we've read to date. But it's weird that they're starting with the origin of Chameleon Boy in the same issue that R.J. Brand appears.
Yes, because, dear friends, they actually have some sort of connection.
They actually do. And this isn't revealed until, what, the Invasion?
1979, I think?
Oh, I was going to say, like, the Invasion storyline or something. He comes out as a Durlan.
It is before that. It happens during the Legion's run. It happens pre-Legion of Superheroes 300, which came out in 83 or 84. But yeah, essentially, we don't know this yet. R.J. Brand is actually a depowered Durlan and is, in fact, Chameleon Boy's father.
Yeah, that is crazy.
It is nuts.
And here's the other thing. I didn't even have to have anybody say, hey, he's just a Santa Claus that gives us money. Cut it, Pharaoh lad, or we're going to be out cash.
Mm-hmm.
You just take one look at that picture of R.J. Brand on that screen, mm-hmm. and you know instantly, if you're a Legion reader, who that is. He's got the white wavy hair. He's got the white mustache. He's got mm-hmm. the really cool super suit. Not a super suit, but the super tailored suit. And if you go and look at any incarnation, especially when I know him as in the Archie Legion, where when they rebooted, mm-hmm. Saturn Girl, Cosmic Boy, and Lightning Lad save him from an attack, and he's mm-hmm. like, oh, you guys are great. You're much better than the Science Police. I'm going to fund your entire program, and we'll call it the Legion of Superheroes. And it's really crazy to, I don't know, I guess there are times when a little minor character like R.J. Brand shows up in a comic mm-hmm. and just tickles the heck out of me.
Did you catch the other important first appearance in this issue?
Is it in this issue? Because she doesn't really technically appear until the next issue.
Well, but she does.
There is a character that shows up that's a witch-like figure who rides in on an ultra-modern broomstick, and my eyes are just like rolling in the back of my head so freaking hard at this point. I'm like, oh my God, a witch and a devil and a Viking and a, oh no, I can't deal with this anymore.
But the hag first appears in this issue.
Zola Hack? Hack?
The hag is actually somebody else.
She is somebody else, and we're going to find out about her in the next issue. And we're also going to find out who Surprise and Mysterious are. I guarantee you, it's not who you think they are.
Dun dun dun.
If you enjoy the show, we would appreciate your support. You can find out more and become a Legion Clubhouse member at patreon.com/majorspoilers.
Before we get into the next exciting segment, of the Legion Clubhouse. I wanted to share this bit of information that I got from Michael, who says Adventure 348 was Shooter's first story written, but not published. So you might be right in thinking it was given to him to polish up. And yes, that episode was the Legion's 60th anniversary with the April 2018 cover date issues. Thanks so much for writing in, Michael, and letting us know this little bit of Legion lore. And listeners, if you have any information that you'd like to share, little bits of Legion lore that you're picking up that maybe we missed, drop me a line, podcast@majorspoilers.com. When I first read issue 350, I got really, really angry.
How so?
And also somewhat elated, too. But I got really angry because I'm like, why is all this fantasy stuff, you know, literally witches and devils and centaurs, why is this showing up in my Legion of Superheroes book? This should be future stuff, not throwbacks of the 1950s and characters that you will find in the 1950s. Until I looked and saw who wrote this issue.
Yep. This issue was written by E. Nelson Bridwell. This is actually his very first work on the Legion, although not his first work for DC.
Oh, no. And this is the weird thing. We've been praising Jim Shooter for this 14-year-old kid who got to work on DC Comics, and they hired him to write Legion of Superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
Edward Bridwell actually started, and he may have been one of the earliest child writers or fans of comics to get into comics. I mean, he started in the 1950s.
Yeah, he was one of the first fans to actually become a pro.
Yeah, so he would have been in his 20s.
I think he was 19 because he was born in 1931. And if he started with, I believe he started with EC and Mad Magazine around 1950, 51, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it so shows that although his first public work consisted of a text page in the Adventures into the Unknown number 9 of 1950, he, you know, still was this kid at heart and went on to write comics, of all places, for Mad Magazine.
Yeah. He's actually the guy who came up with the "What You Mean We Paleface" line in the Lone Ranger parody. That's so, I mean, it's, I've been using that joke badly since I was about 8 years old. So.
So not only is he writing for Mad Magazine, he's writing for DC Comics, in 1965, he was assigned to the Superman titles as an editor. He would originally work with Lois Lane and later on the Superman family. You know, Jim Shooter said that Weisinger did not always treat his assistants well, saying that his assistant was Nelson Bridwell. And boy, he tortured Nelson. He was just awful to Nelson. Bridwell, however, recalled in 1980 an important lesson learned from Weisinger that said, "You've got to keep in mind that while there are a lot of people who read about the characters before, there are always new people coming along, and you've got to realize that you can't count on them to know the whole legend of the character," which is fascinating because at this point, it doesn't happen all the time, but we're starting to see, hey, here's the origin of Superboy in this one particular issue that we got. What are these memories that Superboy has that is going to make him cry and get Shrinking Violet out of his head, right? The other thing that I discovered when doing some research on Edward Bridwell was that he was a huge fan of mythology and folklore.
Yep. And that comes through in the Devil's Four-Way.
Exactly. When you see that pop up, I was like, oh, this makes complete sense now.
Yeah. And Nelson also was in the 70s, when I started actually reading DC books, and this isn't actually in the 70s, but it's books from the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
In the 70s, there was a recurring bit that would show up. There was Bob Rozakis, the Answer Man, and then there was Nelson Bridwell, who was kind of DC's continuity guy.
Yeah, totally their continuity guy.
And you can see it in this issue because all of the flashbacks and all of the trophies given to Superboy and Supergirl, or I should say in issue 350, all of the trophies given to Superboy and Supergirl actually reference previous issues and previous stories.
Yeah, he ended up becoming, he was always a stickler on continuity, and it kind of always bothered him. So I think whenever he got a chance to write like these two issues, it was a chance for him to go, okay, listen, I'm bringing in things that if you've been reading Legion of Superheroes, the Adventure Comics stuff, you should know where these things come from.
Yeah.
It's said that his love and knowledge of old comics led to him becoming the editor of numerous reprint books at DC Comics, including the Giant Size and the hardcovers and stuff. In addition to being an assistant editor with Mort Weisinger, he also worked as an assistant editor with Julie Schwartz to keep track of the continuity in all of the Superman books that were being published, which I find really, really cool.
And he actually invented Kryptonese.
What?
Yeah. The thing about the Kryptonians is that back in the day, there was a Kryptonian language.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started making changes and adjusting it. There are two Kryptonian languages. There's Kryptonian and Kryptonese.
Right.
Kryptonese is actually a standardized alphabet used in the comic books of the 1950s and 1960s. 118 letters in the Kryptonese alphabet. And it was used correctly. And if you knew Kryptonese, you could actually decipher things that were written in Kryptonese. Mm-hmm. That stayed in place until the end of Crisis on Infinite Earths.
The other thing that's, and I'm not saying that this is Bridwell, but this is something that we'll get to in the future with Interlac is the same way. It's a standardized language that if you know how to read Interlac, you can go in and decrypt things that are going on in the world of Legion of Superheroes.
Little jokes hidden in the back by Keith Giffen.
So how did Bridwell become the inventor of Kryptonese that lasted for, you know, 20 plus years? It's because so many people in the letters columns of the Superman books were like, what does this mean? What does this mean? How come this, what does this translate to? And so he came down and broke it down and presented it to everyone. So I think that's really cool. And I wanted to spend this middle segment this week to talk about Edward Nelson Bridwell, because even though he's not in a lot of Legion comics, because again, we're in this shooter era, he pops up a couple of times, in the next 10 episodes, but he really has a big impact on everything that's going on in the Superman comics. And if we're talking about continuity, which is something that I really, really appreciate in comics, especially in pre-crisis and even a little bit post-crisis stuff, when we're dealing with continuity and how important continuity is, man, we would not be where we're at today without Bridwell going in and saying, hey, listen, in this issue, the Superman actually flew off into the sky, and we can't have him drilling down into the earth here. You know, he's really focused on that kind of stuff. I would probably say that he is to the 1960s as to what Mark Waid was during the original 52 weekly series that was going on at DC Comics.
And what now I can't remember his name. At Marvel Comics in the 70s and 80s, Mark Gruenwald had a similar sort of role. He was the guy where you'd go, hey, what? Why is this like this? And Gruenwald would be like, well, back in Iron Man 156, this happened. I want to say Nelson created Dial H for Hero, too.
He did. He did the Inferior Five.
Yes, the Inferior Five is wonderful, and nobody loves them anymore but me.
He also co-created the Secret Six.
The original Secret Six is also incredible stuff.
Yep. I'm looking to see what else he would have done. He wrote Captain Carrot and his amazing Zoo Crew.
I love that book.
He was an editor for the 100-page Giants. he worked on the limited series The World of Krypton that ran from July until September of 1979. He wrote The Secrets of the Legion of Superheroes with Paul Kupperberg. Yep, and so there's a lot of stuff. He introduced the characters Fire and Ice into the Justice League. And he also introduced the Global Guardians in DC Presents number 46 in 1982.
Both of which were adapted from his work on the Super Friends comic book, which he wrote back in, I want to say, 75, 76, 77.
Yep.
And I loved that book when I was a kid and didn't realize it was all the same guy that I loved from other stuff.
Yeah, now I don't know when he stopped writing. The last one that I see here is like an 82 thing. He died of lung cancer in 1987. So it would be nice to think that he wrote until he felt cancer, but more than likely the stuff that came out in the middle to late 80s was literally his last works.
Probably so. I want to say the last thing I remember him writing was Captain Carrot.
Yeah, so that would have been
83.
Yeah. Finally, a little bit, his papers are acquired by the McFarlane Library, not the same McFarlane that you know from toys. But apparently, if you go to the University of Tulsa, you can go read his papers in their special collections.
Ooh, tell Carl that. He lives in Tulsa.
Yeah, yeah. Also, a couple of little homages, a little inside
inside baseball,
a little inside humor or a little inside nudge to comic fans, especially if you're someone who follows continuity. Characters bearing his name have appeared in some seminal works, such as The Watchmen. Captain Metropolis is named Nelson Gardner, which as a tribute to Bridwell and to Gardner Fox. Mm-hmm. And in Astro City number 5, there is a Mr. Bridwell that appears. He's a shape-shifting extraterrestrial.
But you know the name of Mr. Bridwell's home race.
What is it?
They're the Enelsians.
The Enelsians. And what do they do, Matthew? What do the Enelsians do?
The Enelsians collect all the information that they can on all the superhumans of Astro City.
Almost like they're cataloging and keeping track of their continuity.
Almost like that.
I wonder how that's going to play out in the rest of this adventure.
Adventure Comics number 351, The Forgotten Legion, The Faces Behind the Mask. Published December 1966. Written by E. Nelson Bridwell with art by Kurt Swan. Evilo and his Devil's Dozen have triumphed, but Surprise and Mysterious have a surprise for them.
Oh, Matthew, we have to find out the exciting conclusion
of
The Forgotten Legion in issue 351 of Adventure Comics. Now, Superboy and Supergirl have gone back in time.
Mm-hmm.
They're playing some rockin' Huey Lewis and the News music.
No, they're back in the 60s and the 50s.
Oh, well.
So she's listening to Palisades Park by Chuck Berry, and he's listening to Palisades Park by Chuck Mangione.
So they have to get to R.J. Brand's planet, the Legion of Superheroes do.
Yep.
And when they get there, they're attacked by all sorts of badkins.
Space monkeys.
Part of Professor Evilo's Devil's Dozen.
Evilo.
You know, he has captured Lightning Lad.
He has.
He shorted out his arm. He's broken it, in fact.
He has little creatures that ate part of his arm, which has got to be unnerving.
And this is where I was saying earlier about where he tries to shove him into a glass bell jar and have a devil infuse itself into his body. Lightning Lad punches Dr. Evilo right in the face. I know, Professor Evilo.
Evilo.
And Professor Evilo's like, hey, you're supposed to be programmed not to be able to do these things to me. How can you have punched me in the face like that and the things?
for our purposes, Professor Evilo is going to be played by Jerry Lewis.
Oh, it gets really weird here in a minute. You think the guy just looks like a devil. Oh. Lightning Lad grabs him and says, I thought happy thoughts. I thought good thoughts. And when you think happy thoughts and good thoughts, no way can the devil get you.
That's an oversimplification, but I'm not kidding
because we get fake flashbacks. The second weird thing about the Legion of Superheroes that I have become kind of a little bit of a fan of in the last couple of months, because we have these fake flashbacks. We saw this on the trial of Starboy.
Yep.
Now we see it as Lightning Lad saying, if I was thinking good thoughts, like the time that Brainiac disarmed a bomb right there in front of everybody, or the time that Karate Kid pops up in this issue, jumped in front of a car and karate chopped that car, or that time that other guy held up the brick wall. I couldn't tell because there were so much flames. I didn't know which one he was, but I was thinking good thoughts the entire time.
It's Ultra Boy, dude.
It is Ultra Boy.
You can tell by the fringy boots.
Yes, but there's so much fire going on.
Yes.
But
Evilo has an ace in the hole.
Or should I say horns on his head?
An ace in the forehead, which allow him to shoot darkness. Ah, poor Lightning Lad.
And so now the Legion have to go up against the Devil's Dozen here, all five of them.
Right.
And
it's a baker's dozen.
So here's the thing. I think I figured out there's this room that the old hag sets up of all of these pictures of the Legion members dying and doing all these things. And I think I figured something out about Pharaoh Lad.
What's that?
Pharaoh Lad, you know, jumps in front of a bunch of things. He's trying to prevent people from being killed. I think in reality, Pharaoh Lad doesn't worship Superman or Superboy like the Legion does. Instead, he worships Barry Allen. Because Barry Allen is always, you know, at this point in the future, Barry Allen would have already made the ultimate sacrifice. And here he's constantly trying to make the ultimate sacrifice by jumping in front of things, trying to destroy things so no one else gets hurt.
Interesting. So he could throw himself in. Maybe he's just a crazy death seeker.
He could be a crazy death seeker, but I would like to think that.
Yeah.
He's a fan of Barry Allen.
That sounds like it makes sense.
And you know, they're around the same time. Barry Allen's going to be living around these kids not too long from now.
Any minute now.
Any minute he'll pop up.
It's interesting because this, for all of the things that we say about the writers, even Hamilton, even Shooter in his first appearance didn't necessarily use the whole team.
Right.
And Nelson uses the whole team. And at this point, we actually have a team consisting of Cosmic Boy, Ms. Tyrius, Feral Lad in one of his very, very few appearances.
Right.
For reasons which will become clear in an episode or two. And Fatter Eater Lad are all in action. And I'm like, what a weird team. And then I realize we see another team where Invisible Kid has to punch out Ultra Boy to not use his penetravision
to find
and look
out who's
through
in the
surprise
costume.
Suit. Yeah. And we're seeing little small broken up teams. I feel like these two issues.
Princess Projecta shows up.
Yeah, these two issues are the best use of the big team in really Legion history, as far as I'm concerned.
So
usually
much so that
we four or five people.
So much so we even have to bring in the Legion of Substitute heroes have to show up.
Well, the subs show up for a reason, but the subs do show up, all six of them, because they are now joined by their newest member, Color Kid.
Oh, wait, let's go through this list of Legion of Substitute members who are on this page. We have a Night Girl. We have Fire Lad. We have Stone Boy. We have Polar Boy. We have Color Kid. We have Chlorophyll Kid.
Yep. That's the whole Legion of Substitute.
I'm kind of scratching my head because, maybe I've got a piece of kryptonite stuck in my head. Something doesn't feel right here.
Shrinking Violet is doomed because you never cry.
Let me ask you something. Oh, yeah, she definitely is. Do you think that Bridwell may be trying too hard in this, in these two issues? You know how sometimes when, and I don't know, maybe I don't know enough about Bridwell to say that he was a super fan or that he really fell in love with the Legion of Superheroes or anything like that. But he's given two issues. We haven't seen him write Adventure Comics before. We haven't seen him write Legion of Superheroes before. And here's his chance, following Shooter, to come in and tell a two-issue arc. Now, this may be getting into a cycle of we're cycling through writers. But for the first time that he writes Legion of Superheroes, he's throwing everything, including the kitchen sink, into these stories.
Everybody on the wall. I don't think that he's trying too hard. I think he's trying exactly right. Because we do see something for everyone, everyone to do. We see Cosmic Boy using his powers. We see the new kids integrating with the team. Excuse me, now I have the hiccups. We see the new kids integrating with the team. We see Feral Lad saying, hey, I'm new here. Tell me this plot point. I'll be your cabbage head. We see Matter Eater Lad, who's been on the sidelines since he was fatified in the Super Stalag of Space, coming back and going, nope, I'm going to be a Legionnaire, even if you're going to make fun of me because I can't find a spacesuit that fits. We even see Chuck Bouncing Boy come back as kind of an honorary member to take over and cover monitor duty in the clubhouse. I feel like what Nelson is doing here is really, for the first time in a while, maybe ever, taking advantage of the huge roster of Legionnaires and doing something with them all.
I really agree with it because it really feels like a big team of players, especially when you throw in the substitute heroes. Into this, it just feels like, wow, this is all coming at us. And part of me also still feels like, ooh, man, you're trying just a little bit too hard. This may be too much for everyone to take in at once when we're typically dealing with 6 to 8 Legionnaires per story. This one's including 25. Maybe we don't know. Mysterious.
Surprise,
also, so there's this crazy plot point where in order to counteract all the things that are going on, they have to build a witch's cauldron and collect all of these crazy components so that they can whip up a spell and undo what the old hag is doing. And so yep. not only do they have to get, what is it like? They have to get the footprints.
Eye of Newt and the footprint of a monkey and the hair of a magic user. And
they end up traveling to Mixiel Spitalik's universe to get a sample of his hair.
The fifth dimension. Yep. Kal-El and Mon-El.
Because they're the only ones who can travel into a different dimension.
Yep, they've broken the dimensional barrier before. And what they find in the fifth dimension is a young Mixius Pitalik with a full head of hair.
Yeah, so that was going to be my question. The gimmick is Mixiel Spitalik is like, sure, go ahead, try to cut my hair. Oh, it changed to an alligator. Oh, it changed to a frog. Oh, it changed to a snake. Tee-hee-hee, I'm so clever. And then Superboy figures it out. Hey, wait a minute. Or is it Mon-El figures it out? Hey, wait a minute. You're bald. So in previous incarnations, we have seen him bald, right? I mean, he's always appeared bald.
Yes. Going back, his first appearance is in Superman number 30, mm-hmm. 1944. Granted, that is a story that's retconned at this point to having taken place on Earth 2. That character's name is Muxus Polk, M-X-Y-Z-T-P-L-K. Mm. This is Mixius Pitalik, M-X-Y-Z-P-T-L-K. Mixius Pitalik, however, tends to be a bald imp with like a fringe of Larry Fine white hair and a bowler hat.
Yeah, he does always look like a Larry Fine. I appreciate this look that we see in this comic and in the Silver Age incarnation. Oh, I've seen the scary look that Grant Morrison has done in a more modern time. My favorite is still Gilbert Godfrey's take on the imp in The Adventures of Superman, the animated Adventures of Superman. It just looks really, really cool. I like that design.
Mixius Pitalik is a hard character to do well, because if you don't commit, it just sort of falls apart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to commit to a fifth-dimensional imp within, unstoppable magic powers.
But, both Mon-El and Superboy say their names backwards, and they travel back to their own dimension with a sample of Mixiel Spitalik's hair, just in time for Chuck Tane to be taken down by the Viking dude, at which point Devil Man, Professor Evilo, is like, oh, you have failed me. He's not even a real Legion member. I'm going to banish you to the realm of darkness with my horns. So perish all who bungle their assignments.
And one thing that is interesting, and it's another Nelson twist, at the end of the Mixius Pitalik thing, to go home, they say their real names backwards.
Yes.
Danag Rall and
Laylak.
And then we immediately get Chuck Tane trying to be heroic even without powers. Mm-hmm. This is everything, because immediately the super pets arrive.
Yeah. I mean, this thing, literally when I said these two issues have everything in the kitchen sink, that is what's going on. I mean, Supergirl shows back up. They turn the old hag into someone called the White Witch of Planet Naltor.
The White Witch is a babe.
Wait a minute. But Naltor, Matthew, that's a home of Dream Girl.
It is. Dream Girl. Hey, she's one of the members of the Legion of Substitute Heroes.
No, she can't be, because she was not in those pages, in that page where it showed the entire roster of the Legion of Substitute Heroes. She and Starboy are both not in that shot.
Well,
hey, wait a minute.
That's because they're wearing helmets.
Oh, surprise and mysterious. Oh, I'm hitting my head on the table. Wah, wah, wah. Yes, I'm joking, ladies and gentlemen. Some people think when I'm being this way that I'm being serious.
God, why?
I don't know why. But yes, the whole gimmick is, all this time, the Legion thought that in these lead-lined suits were Superboy and Supergirl. Mm-hmm. But in reality, it was Dream Girl and Starboy. And they're like, oh, no, we did this because, Superboy and Supergirl wanted us to. And we knew we could help, even though you didn't want us to be members of the Legion. And now that we've taken care of all this, I'm sure you don't want us to be members of the Legion anymore. So we'll leave. And everybody's like, are you kidding? We want you to be a permanent members of the team again.
Invisible Kid uses his privilege as the leader to say, nope, we want you to stay.
Yeah. Yay.
So Starboy is a Legionnaire again, and Dream Girl, for the first time, officially joins the Legion for realsies.
But what about White Witch? She's a babe. Yes, she does. What? When did Gilligan's Island come out?
1964.
Okay, so 1966.
Do not White say Witch, that she looks like Ginger Grant.
She is a dead ringer for Ginger Grant.
She is a dead ringer for Ginger Grant. I hate you for mentioning that.
She is a dead ringer for Ginger Grant.
Or are they both dead ringers for a young Marilyn Monroe?
No. So reality, I would say that White Witch, who does become a member of the Legion of Superheroes decades
way from now, down the line. Yeah. After the Great Darkness saga, I want to say.
Dream Girl would be that dead ringer for Jane Mansfield.
Mm.
You know, that platinum blonde colored hair.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not as well. In these two, when you see White Witch and Dream Girl next to one another, one of them is definitely more well endowed.
Dream Girl is pretty much always drawn with the most common superpower, if mm-hmm. you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interestingly, there was this scientist that Professor Evilo was using. He wanted to get Lightning Lad's arm fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And also, for some reason, get his arm fixed and give him a real arm, but also, at the same time, take away his lightning powers. And also, since he's captured Chuck Tane, the doctor might as well do something with him. But when Professor Evilo is like, hey, you superhero kids, trying to foil my powers, will you come inside and I'll show you what's really going on? And we find out that everybody's fine. The doctor has reinflated Chuck, has yep. deflated Matter Eater Lad,
yep.
and Lightning Lad has two good arms. Two yep. good arms.
The doctor basically is not happy with Evilo because Evilo experimented on him and turned him into what looks like a vampire Don Rickles.
Oh, yeah. His nose is on his forehead. He's got snake teeth.
It's horrifying.
He's got crazy eyes. Really, if you thought that the Jigsaw Monster was freaky.
And I do.
This doctor guy is even more so.
Absolutely. But it's a lucky thing that he was there because without him, we wouldn't have five Legionnaires back.
Right.
So, yes, he rebuilds Matter Eater Lad, and he rebuilds Bouncing Boy, and he rebuilds Lightning Lad and Arm, and he's like, oh, yeah, Evilo sucks. So,
the
Legion
of
Superheroes.
Of Professor Evilo.
Yeah. Evilo and the Legion of Superheroes go to war, and it turns out that 27 teenagers with amazing powers beat four guys who stepped out of an old episode of Disneyland Presents.
And they're brainwashed Fantastic Four costumed thugs.
Yes.
This chomp gun is chomp delicious, chomp chomp.
Chomp chomp, but...
But wait a minute, Matthew.
The greatest hero of them all has
I was going
to
say, wait a minute. Superboy and Supergirl are on Earth. How can they be on Earth if there's kryptonite in the atmosphere?
Ah, well, thereupon hangs a tale, my friend. Because the kryptonite that affects a Kryptonian on Earth 1 tends to be green. They're a red and
oh, right,
silver.
The green K, man.
Right, but you know who's affected by blue kryptonite?
Who?
Bizarro.
Bizarro is affected by blue kryptonite. That's right.
And blue kryptonite has no effect at all on a normal Earth 1 Kryptonian. So,
really?
Color Kid of the Legion of Substitute Heroes can simply turn the cloud blue.
Is that how that works?
Well,
I mean, at least here it works, but sure, okay.
Well, here's the thing.
I mean, Element Lad can't do anything about it, but let's let this Color Kid do it.
What we perceive as color is, in fact, a wavelength of light. It is essentially a particular wavelength of radiation
yep.
that our eyes perceive.
Yep.
So, Color Kid, having the ability to alter the wavelengths of that radiation, theoretically can, in fact, alter literal radiation from that kryptonite cloud. In
sure,
as much as
let's say that.
Yeah, well, in as much as a kryptonite cloud that's red mm-hmm. has a different effect than a kryptonite cloud that's green, even though it's the same element for all intents and purposes, the red and the green have different effects because different color means different radiation wavelength. The reds have like 700 nanometers.
Do you want to go into an imaginary look how awesome this two book collection is?
Go for it.
On the final page, what do we see on the panel in that final page?
Let's see.
We see a rainbow of colors on Color Kid.
It's a rainbow in the sky.
Go to the first page uh-huh. of the first issue of this two issue arc.
Mm-hmm.
And we see Superboy traveling to the future. and a rainbow colored tube. They're telling you all the way at the beginning of the book
that color kid's going to save the day.
The color kid is going to save the day. And so the other interesting thing, the other cool thing about the ending of this and how color kid comes and saves the day, color kid is a reader suggestion.
He is, yes.
And so in the end, the readers win. There is some reader out there is like, oh my God, they're just crying when they get to the end of this issue. I can just see that kid just crying, yep, going, oh my God, they not only used Color Kid and kicked him out of the Legion, he became a Legion of Substitute Heroes member. He saved the day and saved Superboy and Supergirl. Oh, this is my greatest day, and it's all downhill from here.
That's true. That's probably exactly true. That's what that kid thought. But more importantly, Color Kid kind of represents something else that we see in both of these issues, in that both issues have a Bits of Legionnaire Business column.
Mm-hmm.
Both issues have a ton of reader suggestions.
It just goes like a down the list.
Ridiculous amount of reader suggestions.
I couldn't even get through them all.
Yeah, and there's just, boom, suggestion after suggestion. Radiation Roy and Bob Loblaw and all of these guys that people want to suggest to the Legion. I think what we're seeing
Did you use Bleached Blonde? Or no, that was what they were saying about Saturn Girl. Yeah, you're right. There's just too many of them.
There's too many. And the ridiculous thing about them all is that this is the point where I think the fans are really crazy, because every time we see a Legion reboot, this, not specifically just this era, but these two issues are really the things that they go back to. If you look at the SW6 Clone Legion right before Zero Hour, they go back to this era. If you look at most of what we saw in the early bits of the revamped Legions, it's always tying back to this era when the team was at its largest, when all the romances were there, when Matter Eater Lad was in play, when Bouncing Boy was in play, when Barrow Lad was here and not yet, when Karate Kid had showed up and Starboy was a murderer, and Element Lad had a big E on his chest, even though they don't use the regular alphabet in the 30th century.
We still need to bring a couple of heroes back. And I'm pretty sure we get to add at least a couple of more during this time period. But I would agree, this is as dumb as this story is when you're reading it. In hindsight, when you know who the writer is and what he's trying to do and saying, look, continuity matters, and he's bringing in his medieval and folklore background into this, that makes the story very interesting. The fact that with a blink of an eye, the devil is undone by someone he thought he had control of, and we get Bouncing Boy and Matter Eater Lad and Lightning Lad back with his arm for how long, question mark? You know, it's really amazing. And then we get Starboy and Dream Girl and Princess Projecta and Pharaoh Lad and Karate Kid chopping a car. I mean, wow, man, this issue has everybody and everything. And even though it is the dumbest story, I mean, it is literally the dumbest story. We also get RJ Brand and the White Witch, which will pay off way on down the road. So if you can get your hands on these two issues, 350 and 351, oh, you are in for a trip.
All of our players are assembled. This is the last appearance in Legion of the Legion of Super Pets. So we don't see the Super Pets. Yeah, it's not that terribly huge of a loss. We see the Super Pets one more time in a Supergirl issue of Adventure a few years down the line. But we are really at the point where the Legion has kind of transcended the weirdo, crazy Superman backup strip status. And now everything is in play for the rest of Legion history. Pretty much all of our major players are on the field at this point.
Matthew, we have come to the end of another Legion Clubhouse. What did we learn this week?
We learned that you should be nice to old hags because they might secretly be bombshells.
Also, if you're having a hard time cutting someone's hair, it's probably a wig.
And most importantly, if you have a horse, a monkey, a dog, and a cat, and they all wear capes, they're good for about four appearances before the whole thing gets tiring.
That wraps it up for this installment of the Legion Clubhouse. Oh my gosh, the Legion has taken on the Devil's Dozen. But I wonder what will happen next time when they take on the Fatal Five. As always, we appreciate your feedback. Podcast at majorspoilers.com. We appreciate the feedback also on Apple Podcasts or wherever fine podcasts are served. And if you want to keep this show going, please head over to patreon.com/majorspoilers. Kick in a few bucks if you find this show interesting. Get a laugh. Learn a little bit about your favorite superheroes. We would certainly appreciate it. And until next time, I'm Lilac.
And I'm Danag Raw.
I'll be back in 30 days.
The Legion Clubhouse is a production of Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC, and is produced by Steven Schleicher. Your hosts were Matthew Peterson and Steven Schleicher. You can follow Matthew at Mighty King Cobra and Steven at Major Spoilers. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Legion Clubhouse. If you have questions or comments, send them to podcast@majorspoilers.com. I'm Jason Inman. Until next time, eat it, Grandpa.
This podcast is copyright 2018 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.